Hide your kids. Lock the doors. You're listening to HR's most dangerous podcast. Chad Soash and Joel Cheeseman are here to punch the recruiting industry right where it hurts. Complete with breaking news, brash opinion, and loads of snark. Buckle up, boys and girls. It's time for the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
Yeah, what's up, everybody? It is the San Diego Chickens' favorite podcast, a.k.a. the Chad and Cheese Podcast. Chicken. I'm your co-host, Joel Cheeseman. Joined, as always, the Felix to my Oscar, Chad Soash, is in the house. And we are excited to welcome Blair Fambro to the podcast.
Fambro.
Blair is the manager of strategy and DEI at Hershey.
Wow.
That's right. Blair, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank
One of the
me.
Famous tasting companies of all of America.
Still the number one chocolate bar in America, right? I mean,
yep. Yes.
So Blair, a lot of our listeners won't know who you are. They know Hershey, of course, but give them a little bit about what makes Blair tick.
What makes me tick is being motivated to make an impact on our organization. It gets me motivated in the morning. What can I say about myself? So I've been in the industry for 13 years now. So all of my background has been DE&I and talent acquisition. So being based out of Detroit, Michigan, one of the things I've always been passionate about is working at the time for the auto industry, trying to make an impact there.
Yeah.
Being from Detroit, that's all I heard, you know, the big three, working at the big three. And one of the things I wanted to do was work there, but I also had a passion about technology. So every company that I worked for, it had a component of IT. So that's what motivates me, but also being a diverse workforce. Something I love to do.
And are you a Lions fan, Blair?
Absolutely. My Lions would be back in
You're
the Super Bowl.
You're off the ledge. Yeah. How are you feeling about this season?
I'm feeling good. You know
okay?
what? It's funny
right.
because this is a quick deep dive into that. In my entire life, this is the furthest I've seen the Lions go.
Oh, yeah.
So this was like a Super Bowl to me. But now let's see what they can do next year.
Yeah. Is it a one-off or do you think they can repeat?
I think they can repeat.
Okay.
I think they learned their lesson. They have a good, solid coach, and we'll see what happens.
Optimistic.
Great
optimistic.
Coach. Great coach.
Yep, definitely.
I mean, great coach, players. I was rooting for the Lions because Lions.
If you weren't, you didn't have a soul.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who did not have a Super Bowl? I mean, come on, man. And then, yes.
You know, I was rooting for the Cleveland-Detroit Super Bowl.
Yes.
That would have broken the NFL.
That would have broken the internet.
And side note, you are a Central Michigan grad, a proud MAC conference graduate, like me.
Oh, come on, man. Come on. MAC conference. Or when are they joining a real conference? Anytime soon? Anyway.
Chirp, bitch. All right? chirp.
Says no man ever. Okay. So, real deep down personal question. Did they make you come to Hershey to actually like interview like the town Hershey?
No, everything for me was remote. So.
Oh, yeah? Do you want to go, though? Because all the like documentaries
like
and whatnot,
Willy
I was
Wonka.
Like, I want to go. Yes. I don't want to be the blue boy or anything like that. But at the end of the day, that
the
looks
Oompa Loompa.
Yes. Yeah. It looks amazing.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to visiting. I haven't visited yet. I'm seeing how this started. But this summer, I'm definitely going to go and definitely take out the amusement park they have there and get sugar wasted. Take the family down there.
Sugar wasted.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Wow.
I love it.
That's
I
a whole wasted I haven't experienced
okay,
yet.
Okay, so here you're a newbie at Hershey, so we're not going to dig into that, okay? We're going to give you a little time before we have you back on the show, then we'll talk a little bit about Hershey. Let's talk a little bit about GM, transition to Twitter. Let's talk about that, because you grew up Detroit.
Yeah.
Big three. That's what you knew.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And then you had a chance to go to GM. How did that feel? Was that kind of, did that feel like, oh man, here we go. Promised land.
Was your mom proud?
Yeah, they definitely were proud. Even though my family is more on the Chrysler Stellantis side, I was still proud to be a part of a GM. It was great because for me, that's all I grew up seeing, either Ford, Chrysler or GM. So working there, it was exciting because when I came in, GM was bringing everything in-house. So you think about what they'd done over the years and all the employees they hired, they always did things from an RPO perspective.
Yes.
So I was able to come in and be the first wave hired in 2016 to support their IT division. So being successful with that, coming into an organization and building their IT division, not only in Detroit, but Atlanta, Phoenix and also Austin, Texas.
Wow.
I think that was amazing. And that pretty much spearheaded my career into other areas. So if you look at what GM is doing now with the electrification vehicles, with the electric Hummer, the Silverados, at one point I was the recruiter hiring people to design those batteries.
Yeah.
So that was exciting to say, hey, on my resume, if you see the shift in the automotive industry, I played a huge component in that in regards to the hiring aspect of it. But then I had the opportunity to be a D&I lead for the organization,
okay,
for engineering. So that's pretty much solidified, you know, every way to be well-rounded within TA and diversity, that role pretty much spearheaded where I am today.
What did that consist of, though? So because we've talked about on the show, there have been a lot of DEI leads that just didn't get the resources necessary to actually move the needle. It didn't feel real, right? You were put in a position where you didn't have the resources necessary. Was it a scrap? Was it a fight? What was it about? Or did you get the resources you thought you needed to actually move the needle?
It was both. And the reason I say that, because GM had a strong presence in regards to diversity, and not in TA, but in regards to the global diversity team that wasn't responsible for TA.
Yeah.
So I had the support system there, but I pretty much had to fight to say, hey, if we want to make an impact from a TA perspective, we need to make some adjustments. And I had to make business case of a certain resources, certain conferences, you know, and to get certain visibility for my colleagues. A lot of people didn't understand diversity from a hiring perspective. A lot of people were intimidated by having those conversations.
In Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't understand diversity in a hiring space.
Where it was about 85-95% diverse city.
Yes.
So it was something I was passionate about, and I needed to spearhead that.
Yeah.
And it was not focused just on Detroit. And I think a lot of people from a location perspective didn't understand that or was intimidated by the discussion, because you want to make sure that you're being sensitive to other people's needs, but you want to make sure that you don't cross the line when communicating with someone. And for me, I don't believe in crossing the line. I believe in having open dialogue.
Yeah.
And I love to have those uncomfortable conversations. And one of the things, it's my pet peeve, if you feel a certain way, tell me how you feel. You don't, just because I'm a Black male or considered a minority, you don't have to walk around eggshells. I want to know how you feel. I want to know your perspective.
Yeah.
So it's a learning curve for everyone.
Oh yeah.
So that's what was important for me.
So sticking with GM for a second, seems like every week we talk about the United Auto Workers, another win, another notch on their belt. How do you feel being out of the industry, knowing the unions and the win against the big three? Was diversity initiatives part of that maybe we didn't see in the mainstream media? What were your thoughts as the union was winning against the big three, the concessions?
I thought that was huge for two reasons, because I think the world was pretty much watching that. So everything from supply chain, automotive, anything that has to do with plants outside of the big three, people were watching that. I think they pretty much spearheaded what they were doing from a manufacturing perspective.
Uh-huh.
And the diversity component, you know, more, if you look at the numbers and the statistics, you know, more minorities and women are in those factories. So from a diversity perspective, that was a huge win for them.
Okay.
So getting where they needed to be. We think about the fight of people who were working there for years as contractors, not getting those raises, not getting profit sharing.
Yeah.
I think that was huge that people made that investment to work there 5 or 10 years and keeping the same compensation even during inflation.
Yeah.
So being able to bring those people on board after 90 days and getting them what they felt that they deserve, I think is great.
Yeah.
So that was a huge win.
You were at GM during the George Floyd, the Me Too movement. What was it like being at a major corporation as these huge events, social events were happening? And how did you see maybe opinions change or processes change during that time?
It was huge emotions from everyone. It was a lack of understanding. It was confusion. It was unanswered results on what transpired for everyone. But one of the things I can say about the organization is that they made an environment for everyone to come together during that time. We had open discussions in regards to how individuals are feeling, no matter your background, what you've seen, what you believe. And I think that pretty much helped the organization come together as one. That's one thing. That's one of the things I can say I enjoyed working about GM. When something transpired, I think we came together as an organization and even as a community to support
That's
one
great.
Another.
Is that the culture? I mean, the culture was like, we are our people. Most companies talk about that. They talk a big game, but it sounds like what you're talking about, GM actually believes
it's
it.
Genuine.
Yeah, I believe they believe it because of the leadership that we have. The chief of diversity during the time I was there had a close relationship with her. I believe every initiative, and I believe her passion based on the equity and inclusion and belonging. So that's what made me want to stay there for the long term.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, if you look at my background, I moved around a bit because I wanted to get every experience that I can. But if you look at my background, I stayed at GM the longest than any other organization.
Good for you. Opportunities pop up, you take the opportunities. Let's talk about the other side of the coin on that one. Let's talk about Twitter. Okay. So because that culture changed dramatically while you were there. So what was your position while you were there? And talk a little bit about that experience.
So working at Twitter, I wasn't sure if I wanted to leave General Motors, go to Twitter, but I can tell you the experience, just the interview experience blew me away.
Really?
Yeah. One of the things, and I've always been based in Detroit, Michigan. So working for a company that's based in San Francisco, culture was different. People were different. But going through that process and learning about the culture, what they're looking to do. And one of the reasons why I decided to go to Twitter, because I was going to work on something new. No one was doing machine learning like Twitter and like the Metas of the world.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get my hands on that to be able to say, hey, I worked for an organization that did the electric vehicles.
Yeah.
Now I'm working for an organization that's doing machine learning.
That's just forward looking. I mean, come on, batteries, machine learning. I mean, because that was before the big drop of ChatGPT, right? Right.
Yep. So right before that.
Yeah.
So when I was at Twitter, I was doing pretty much, if you use Twitter and you notice the recommendations or who to connect with, the news feeds, I was a senior technical sourcer there hiring the people that pretty much worked on that platform, the recommendations, news feeds, and other components.
Talk about data scientists, or what are we talking about with regard to the types of positions that you were actually hiring for?
Data scientists were part of it, but NLP, natural language processing, was one of the, so predictive text, things from that perspective I was able to do. Before leaving Twitter, exiting Twitter, I was also a part of their security team. So anything from, if you think about the security aspect of it, if you think about safety or abuse or child abuse or anything that happens on Twitter, I was responsible for that. Or also just the overall privacy. And one of the things is, if you create a Twitter account and you deactivate your account, Twitter can keep your information for a year. But the government requires them to delete all that information to keep your privacy safe. So I was responsible for that. And I felt that each part of the team I worked for at Twitter was impactful, and I think it was innovative. And I pretty much enjoyed that.
So Linda Yaccarino today testified in front of Congress that they had all the security protocols buttoned up. Everything was good. Although they decimated a lot of the staff, like 80% of the staff. So the question is to the public out there, how can you stay secure with less people? Can AI help us be more secure? Because it's almost like that's how many of the companies want us to think. We don't need people to do this. AI is going to keep us secure.
Absolutely not. I don't believe that one bit. You're going to always have people. One of the things I like to say about AI is it's going to help us work more efficiently.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, it's more like a Google assistant to me, where it's helping you enhance your day-to-day experience, but it's not going to take away anything that we do from a security perspective. I don't know how they're doing it with less people. I don't know how secure it is, but I think, you know, once things start to pick up again and these tech companies, that's probably going to be the biggest area of hiring, security. I mean, without security, the platform is no good. You can have mediocre machine learning, but if you don't have security, your platform is not going to last long.
Yeah.
You've been part of some incredibly competitive industries, the car industry, not just the big three, but Germany and Japan.
Yeah.
You've gone to Silicon Valley. You've got Facebook, Google, all the other tech companies, the hot, cool startups that are there. Talk about how you approached recruiting in such competitive industries. And how did you think about DEI being an advantage over your competition in helping you recruit top talent?
That's funny, because when I think about recruiting, I think about my style. I try to mimic a programmer. And the reason I say programmer, because although my title has been recruiter, I've always been a sourcer. So how do you find talent? Is being able to come up with unique site commands, unique coding to find individuals. And sometimes you have to have that mentality to be able to find those individuals. And what helped me stand out opposed to other recruiters is being able to do things recruiters won't do. And for me, a lot of recruiters are excellent in regards to negotiation, in regards to other things. But in regards to finding those purple squirrels, that was my advantage. And I wanted to beat the competition by doing that. I felt that at one point I didn't have the gift of gab to have that salesman approach.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I said, what can I do behind the scenes to outwork them?
Find your superpower.
Yeah. And I think the sourcing aspect was always,
like you outworked them.
Yeah, was always my superpower to outwork them and find candidates that they wouldn't be able to find instead of relying on the ATS.
Yeah.
That was my superpower. But I can say for me, DE&I really became a passion when I started working at Hewlett Packard. And this is when I really was sitting in the tech industry outside of the staffing world.
Yeah.
And I never seen diverse teams. It was all male dominated. And I seen that, you know what? how are these hiring practices, you know, how do you build diverse teams? Or, you know, you had ERG groups in the organization that people weren't leveraging. So yeah. I say, you know what, how do I work with these people? This is back in 2013 and I was still mid in the industry. So how do I tap in with people that's already here to engage with people? How do I network with them and learn what they're doing outside of the organization so I can get engage those individuals? And I started to do more speaking engagements, talking about diversity, inclusion in the tech industry. And that's a pretty much, you know what, this is going to be my niche. I have the background with engineering, IT, but a lot of people are not invested in the diversity aspect of it. Because the reason diversity is important, because your company is more profitable. Everyone is a customer. And at the end of the day, I look at an organization, the only thing that matters is the financial gain when it comes to that. And when it comes to a business growing and constantly growing, but when customers and even myself, when I see individuals that is a reflection of myself or reflection of someone that's not myself, I think of diversity as diversity of thought. One of the things I always looked at was when I hired people at tech industries, they only wanted people from tech industries. Why? You're just hiring the same people with the same thought process.
Yeah.
What if you bring someone from banking that does things a different manner? They have a different process. They can implement what they've done in the industry that you may not have thought of that the other companies are doing.
Yeah.
So I took that approach and that pretty much helped me along my journey.
Recently, it seems like a lot of companies are gutting their diversity efforts. They're laying off managers or executives that have taken those roles. We obviously see the Supreme Court of the country eliminate affirmative action initiatives. What are your thoughts on the future and present of D&I and where it's going? Are you bullish on it? Are you skeptical that it can have a future? Because obviously there was a lot of positivity in the wake of George Floyd, et cetera.
Or will it evolve?
But now it feels like we're on the downslope. What's your take on that?
There's two things. I will say, unfortunately, with D&I and HR, seems like we were always the first to go when it comes to big layoffs in that perspective. But I think seeing that is going to help more people gain opportunity outside of relying on the organization. I've seen more people have startup companies since these layoffs of D&I than in anything else.
Yeah.
I see it changing because I think the people, the customers, and also the employees are going to enforce that. You know, they said the same thing about working remotely. It's not going to work. It's not going to be impactful. People are fighting against that, but the people are actually fighting against working remotely and changing the workforce as we see today. And then you think about it, there's another generation coming up.
Yeah.
And with the Gen Z, they are extremely passionate about diversity, equity, and inclusion. They're also passionate about work-life balance. So companies are going to have to adjust with the generations upcoming because they're going to be the ones to make the demands. One thing I can say, once the market increases and we're seeing that diversity being cut, HR is being cut, I think in 2025 and 2026, when people start hiring again, people are going to remember this. All the layoffs, getting laid off by emails and things from that perspective. People are going to remember this, and I think there's going to be a shift in the next 2 years. I think D&I is going to come back stronger than it has.
People are going to remember you, Blair. We appreciate it, my friend.
Even though he didn't bring any Hershey bars to the interview.
next time.
I'm
next
a little
time.
Better
next
on
time.
That.
He,
All right, next time.
He's now, new. Give him some time.
I'll give a pass.
Yeah. Blair, if somebody wants to connect with you, where can they find you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn. It's Blair Fambro. Or you can find me on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel that talks about tips and tricks, interview tips.
Nice.
Sourcing tips. You can find my name on there as Your HR Connect. So feel free to follow me on YouTube and also just check me out on LinkedIn. I look forward to connecting with you all.
You heard it here first. DE&I is going to be back in 25 and the future. Another one in the can, everybody. We out.
Thank you for listening to what's it called? The podcast. The Chad. The Cheese. Brilliant. They talk about recruiting, they talk about technology, but most of all, they talk about nothing. Just a lot of shout-outs of people you don't even know, and yet you're listening. It's incredible. And not one word about cheese. Not one. Cheddar. Blue. Nacho. Pepper Jack. Swiss. So many cheeses, and not one word. So weird. Anywho, be sure to subscribe today on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That way, you won't miss an episode. And while you're at it, visit www.chadcheese.com. Just don't expect to find any recipes for grilled cheese. It's so weird. We out!